Hello and welcome to Salesforce Trails and Trials, where two Salesforce architects and special guests share their wins and woes so that you can learn with us.
Welcome, everyone. So excited for this episode of Salesforce Trails and Trials. Today, we are going to interview Zachary Powles. He's been on a journey that we hope all of our listeners get on as they go from being not knowing what Salesforce is to becoming an admin and then moving into architect roles and doing things they never thought they would. We're very excited to have him on today to inspire all of you. So welcome, Zachary.
Hey there. Glad to be here.
Awesome. And Eric, great to see you again.
Hey, good to see you both.
Yeah, well, I hope that you're all well nourished with the bread you've been baking, and we'll have a great recipe in the show notes today. So to get started, Zachary, why don't you tell us, just give us a couple minutes. You have a very diverse set of hobbies and such. Maybe you can just share a little bit about yourself so our listeners can get to know you a bit.
So my background, I grew up on an acreage in a small farm town in Iowa. I grew up playing basketball, Hoosier territory, and then came out to Pepperdine in Malibu, where I got a degree in philosophy. And then I ended up moving into private wealth management. I worked up in the Portland area, actually in Washington up there. And then I ended up coming back to LA and I did all manner of things to make money. All shared economy sort of stuff, Uber, TaskRabbit, did handyman work around LA. I was operations manager at a home staging company for a while. I got into bartending for a little bit. And all along the way, I spend a lot of my free time. Swing dancing is the main thing I like to do, which a lot of people don't expect, especially from a guy from Iowa. We don't do a lot of dancing out there.
It's classy.
Right?
I like, and competitively, right? Not just for fun.
I've been on a number of teams. I've done couples competitions, couples choreography. I compete at an event here in LA called Camp Hollywood every year. I do a few competitions there, and I've been fortunate enough to get hired out to do gigs sometimes, some weddings and some galas and things. Just it started out as a hobby that I picked up at Pepperdine, and I just really loved it. And that's how I get most of my socializing and a fair bit of my exercise as well.
It's a workout. Tell me if I'm wrong, but what I remember about swing dancing, because I did it when I was in LA also a long time ago, was people are very talented at dancing, but also the costumes. Like, people get into it from a dress perspective as well, like poodle skirts and guys wearing zoot suits. And it's really like with the chain watch. I mean, remembering all kinds of things, but it's not just going out and dancing. It's a whole character.
It is. People really enjoy the aesthetic of the era and they really get into it. And not everybody, you don't need to. I'm still learning a lot about the fashion of the era and picking up my vintage, wool fleck jacket and pants and my fancy ties and whatnot. But yeah, people get really into it. And I've had some friends help me out and find some good deals on wool jackets and the like. But yeah, they go all out, and they even know whether it's, a 20s jacket or a 30s jacket or a 40s jacket or a 50s jacket.
Well, that's
all great. That. And they dress for the era. And
yeah.
There's big events, like a lot of people I know go to Viva Las Vegas, which is a rockabilly. It's like 50s, 60s rock and roll car show in Las Vegas every year. Huge. And I know a lot of people that go there and they dress in their, white tee and jeans with the rolled up pant cuffs and Rebel Without a Cause sort of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like that sort of getting into that era and that aesthetic.
That's the sweet. Well, certainly you have a diverse background and I love it. And I want to just help people understand a little bit of kind of your starting point, right? So maybe you can talk a little bit about, we had a special opportunity to meet. And even before you talk about how we met, I just want you to share a little bit of that kind of transition. You talked a little bit about that moving out here and you did a variety of things, but just that, the decision-making where you were, what you expected to be, I want to just get that sense where people can resonate if they didn't expect to have a tech career. What does that mean?
For sure. And I think this is definitely a story of didn't really expect to have a tech career, and it can really start from anywhere. and Salesforce is a great opportunity. But where I was at that time, I had just sort of finished up work in private wealth management in Portland, didn't really care for it, and just wanted to move back to LA. I had liked LA. I'd grown a friend group here. I was swing dancing. And so I moved back and I just needed to do whatever to make money. And I never really had a strong vision for what I wanted to do with my time. I sort of had a lot of things I wanted to do, and I wanted to do all of them. And I'm fortunate enough and like talented enough that I probably could have chosen a number of different routes and been successful at them. I ended up choosing kind of nothing and doing everything. And I was doing handyman work and Uber, and I did really like the independence. I don't like doing what other people tell me. It's a sort of a temperamental bent that I have. I remember I was telling my friend I grew up with, we were talking about what I had been up to and what I had been getting into over the years and how I was doing my own thing, doing handyman work and whatnot. And he said to me, Zachary, you finally found out that you don't like working for other people. And I was like, yeah. And he says, you know, I could have told you that 10 years ago. So it was a lot of that, just me not really knowing what I wanted to do. Didn't really want to go back and work for the man because I hadn't had a great experience at Fisher. So I was just kind of all over the place a little bit, trying to decide what to do. And then I got hired on TaskRabbit to help move a couch. And it was a heavy couch with like a hide-a-bed in it. And I show up at this guy's house in, you know, the West Valley in LA. We're moving this couch upstairs. It's very heavy, and the doorway we need to get it through at the top is very narrow. And he's just,
you guys yell pivot.
I don't know, is that copyrighted? Can we say that? but he was just asking me about you know, what my background and how I'd studied philosophy, and we talked a little bit about that, and talked about how I kind of like doing my own thing, being my own boss. Honestly, the two things that stuck out the most to it for me were trying to get that couch through the doorway, and it was flush with the door, and he was sitting on the ground outside with his feet up against it, pushing it through the doorway, and I was on the inside thinking, dude, this guy's going to scratch this paint, and he's going to blame me for it. That was the number one thing I was worried about at the time. And then afterwards, he starts talking about Salesforce, which I had never heard of before. Didn't really care to hear about at the time, but he told me about Trailhead, told me that it had sort of provided him an opportunity to, you know, build his own business and do his own thing and help other people. And if I was ever interested, he thought that I might be a good fit for it, might be some way I could move from working with my hands to getting back to working with my head. And I didn't really think much about it. And that was, I think, November. And then by about February of the following year, I'm spending $300-$350 bucks a month on gas just to make not that much money doing handyman work. And I did enjoy the work. I like working with my hands, but I could tell it wasn't going anywhere. So I called this guy up, and this guy happened to be John. And I was like, so what's this sales? And so that was how it started. And it was sort of a slow journey at first, just trying to pick up work with the team and do some Trailhead and figure out what was going on and wrap my head around enough Salesforce knowledge that I could contribute in a meaningful way and make some money doing it. Before I get any further, I don't know if you wanted to add anything to that, John. That's sort of my story of how I ran into this guy and kind of changed my life.
Well, I do remember. So at the time I lived in a house and I had an office, like a 12x14 building behind the house. I felt like it was a pretty nice setup myself. And so Zachary described kind of his world and how much he's driving every day and all of this. And so I was trying to provide a contrast to say, hey, let me just walk you. I walk 11 steps to my office behind my house. I have this cool little man cave back here that I get to do my thing, you know, and I just shared. I said, you know, you could have the same thing here and you could not have to drive anywhere. So just let me know if you're interested. And I think I was very surprised, but he was just like, okay, whatever. And I was like, you know, in my mind, I was like, okay, he has no idea like what I'm talking about. But
you know, I'm sitting in my living room at my desk with my two monitors, and I don't think I'd consider a job that didn't let me stay here.
Right? Yeah. It's so I just think the key element, the takeaway from that is I gave you my info, right? Just saying, hey, just call me when you're ready or if you have any questions. Who knows whether you would call back or not. Ultimately, it's based on your own appetite. But I think the key there is, at the time, you were at a point of like, that's just not for me. It's just not my thing, right? You had, it wasn't in your imagination or your vision. And I think many of our listeners are in the same place. Like, they're at a spot in their careers. They're in a rut or on a path for whatever reason. And they just don't consider the fact that, hey, a little bit of a lane change could be really transformative. And so I'm curious, as you thought about in those 4 months, certainly you had some pressures, but what do you feel like, kind of from a mindset or a paradigm, like, what was it that had to kind of, you know, twist? What were the light bulbs that kind of came on that you had to consider or be open to help you with that lane change and be like, okay, not only am I going to consider this, but I'm really going to put effort behind this, and I'm going to have to do some things that are really like anxiety producing and push me into a lot of mystery and uncertainty. I just want to understand a little bit of that process.
Yeah. And that's sort of covering maybe a lot of time and topics, like time in my journey. Because initially, the thing I needed to learn and sort of get over to make the phone call was two things. One, really coming to accept that, like, I wanted to go somewhere and do something in life, and like shared economy, handyman stuff, unless I was going to start a business doing that, which didn't necessarily appeal to me. It wasn't going to be that. And I needed something else. And I saw that this could be something like that. And then the other thing I needed to sort of entertain the idea of is even entering the tech space. Like, I saw this as a good opportunity, but it was just nothing I'd ever considered before.
So when you were 12, you weren't in your room with a computer?
No, I'm not. I wasn't that guy. And some people like to tinker, and they've always, you know, known they wanted to go into computers, but nah, I studied philosophy in school. So no, I know computers because I grew up with them, but that's about it.
Right. Were they for gaming in your house or just writing papers?
Mostly for papers and academic things. We had some consoles, some computers. We had the old arcade games on our Windows 95. Those were the best.
Yeah.
And some gizmos and gadgets on like 98. That was my jam back then.
Right.
So a bit of gaming, but nothing that I ever considered I wanted to go into that. And not really anybody in my family, even. I might have an uncle in a similar field, but that's
were you the weird one who left Iowa and came out west? Is that an unusual thing in your family?
No, for my family, no. All of my siblings, except for one of my sisters, kind of left. And Mom always says she regrets raising such independent kids, but they sort of like pushed me to leave. And so that was a growing opportunity. But I think in terms of like making the move into tech, it was, I never really had a clear vision of what I wanted to do. And then this opportunity presented itself, and I started to realize that what I was doing wasn't getting me where I wanted to go. So maybe I would at least look into it, because it did seem pretty sweet to be able to work from home and make money and immediately like cut down on gas expenses.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that was sort of the first item that I had to get over and, you know, make the call. And then I started to look into it. And I think there was a long time along the way where like, I still wasn't convinced that I was going into tech, you know, like this was just a thing that I was going to do to make money for now, you know?
Yeah. Like on the side, you're doing the both of them.
Yeah. And so then I started picking up, I got into bartending along the way, and I work at a craft cocktail bar, learned a lot about bartending. I would work music festivals, and you can make some mad money working music festivals as a bartender. And that was really paying my bills, because I didn't really know that much about Salesforce, and I wasn't like in-house as a junior admin or anything. I was just like picking things up, learning along the way, picking up work from John's team. And so the bulk of my income was coming from bartending. And then I think there was another inflection point where I was presented with an opportunity to run a smaller, easier project. It was sort of a saving an old implementation that didn't go well, sort of reworking it. And John came at me and he offered it to me, and I felt grossly underqualified. Did not really want to do it, but he sort of talked. And I was at this point talking about maybe quitting Salesforce, because I was making more money doing bartending anyway. And John sort of, you know, just talked to me about it and sort of had me pump the brakes and just think about it and think about this opportunity. And then he presented me with this opportunity to lead this project. And I decided to go ahead. And I think at the time, like per hour, I would be making more at Salesforce if I could get the hours. But you know, tips and whatnot, I was still making more bartending. And so I decided that if I could really make the transition to get the hours, then there's more of a future in this. And I'm going to quit bartending pretty much altogether. I still work events now and again on the weekends because it's good money. But that was the first, that was a big inflection point where I took another like deeper step into, you know, I'm going to do this. And then that was sort of where I started to really wrap my head around sort of like the system administrator level of things. Because I remember one of the first calls I had to lead for that company was John wanting me to lead a training on like data security. It's like profile sharing rules, that sort of thing. And I was terrified. I was like, I don't even hardly know this stuff yet. And John's like, it's fine. I'll be there. Like, and he like helped me prep for it. And I remember I gave it and I was pretty monotone. I think that was one of the comments John had is, you know, maybe just like try to have some more inflection next time. It's more interesting to listen to. But that was one of my first experiences of this makes me really anxious and I feel really underqualified. I think that was sort of the biggest recurring theme is the more I learn and the more I learn, the more responsibility I gain, and the more responsibility I gain, the more anxiety there is, but then the more skill I have. So then that helps me cope with the anxiety. It's been a constant struggle of just the willingness to continue to step into anxious situations and situations that might be easier to avoid. And this learning how to cope with that would be, I think, one of the biggest things in answer to your question, John, is
Yeah. Well, one thing I just like to highlight, and this is certainly a takeaway for, you know, someone who's considering this journey, is your willingness to let someone partner with you in the process. Mm-hmm. So one, you had to come to a point where you trusted what I said, right? To be like, okay, I'm going to consider kind of hitching my wagon to this guy. Right. Mm-hmm. And the second element is that as you went along and you were testing this out, but yes, had an opportunity to make more short-term money doing the bartending stuff, I think it was, you know, a great attribute that you at least raised that. You shared that with me and said, hey, right, even though it's a competing choice, it would potentially take you away from our team. You shared it and you asked for feedback and you let me speak into that and be like, look, you could do that. That's true. It probably is more short-term money, but does it really, you've stated to me your goals and does it really help further your goals? Or is it really just another lap around the track that's going to bring you back to the same starting position you were at in your last lap around the track? A little more money, but no future. And I think that that is a great aspect of your journey here is that you're willing to trust other people and you invite people in to kind of give commentary and feedback on your journey when choices kind of arise.
Yeah. And that's been a learning point for me as well, being highly introverted and highly independent. And I liked doing my own thing. And then I was very grateful to have you and the team to be able to come to and talk about those things. Yeah. Help me. That's exactly what you did. And you said, yeah, okay, that'll get you here. But like, what if you want to go here? Like, is that going to get you there? I remember you talking about, is that going to get you to, you know, if you want to make 100K or 150K, or if you want to like, you know, gain these responsibilities or support a family in this way, you helped me like really put perspective around which route I wanted to take. I did really appreciate that.
I think it's so great. I read a lot on, so my nighttime reading is Reddit and Twitter and YouTube and stuff like that. On Reddit, I'm on the Salesforce channel or subreddit, and people are always saying, I did my badges. I've got some basic admin intermediate or admin beginner badges, but how do I go get experience? And you were fortunate, you know, you found each other. So you had a pipeline of work where you get a coach that you could connect with and find, you know, small tasks and who you got to grow with. Looking back, I guess for both of you, for people who are like, you know, I like what Zachary did. I don't know a John Klein. I mean, John, I guess they could contact you and say, I'm interested. But what should one do when you want to make that change? You find Trailhead, because now we're talking about it. They can go look up trailhead.salesforce.com and learn about it. But like, how do you get that admin experience that is actually paid for? Do you have any tips on that? How do you start? Do you meet a John? Do you go find the Salesforce careers consultants that are near you and say, hey, Let me intern.
Yeah, do you want to take this or do you want me to give my 2 cents?
You can give your 2 cents first because that'll probably lead to what I'm going to say. Go ahead.
I will say that it has been invaluable to have a consulting background where I get a lot of variegated experience in a short amount of time. So there's different routes you can take. Trailhead is great. Getting certifications is great. I will say getting my sysadmin cert, while necessary and beneficial, didn't really teach me a ton about how to actually understand Salesforce and do Salesforce. It was really the work that did it. So, and it obviously depends on where you're at in your life. Like a junior admin position is a great place to start, even in-house somewhere, but it might not be the right fit for somebody in a different season in life. But I did find consulting to be invaluable because you're going to get more experience across a wider range of things and learn much more quickly. And so if there's any opportunity to do that, even if
it's as opposed to like going in-house somewhere, you could say, hey, I have my badge, I'm willing to do your work. But I agree with you. You'd get a lot more work and you'll have this team around you too, of people you can ask questions to.
And yeah, learn from the team, because half of my knowledge came from somebody else on my team who taught me at some point because I had a problem. So nothing wrong with going in-house, especially if that's what you want to do long-term. But if there's any opportunity to, even if you can't find a John Klein, any sort of consulting is going to accelerate the growth, I think, a lot.
Yeah. Right. John, what about you?
Well, certainly I agree. The DevPod Academy, you know, was created to foster this kind of Padawan or apprenticeship style learning that is well backstopped and resourced so that people feel the confidence to go into situations that they wouldn't otherwise do, knowing that someone is there to backstop and redirect if needed. You know, and in an in-house scenario, you're dealing with what I would consider, like if you're in an organization, it's pretty rare that that organization really wants to innovate in a significant way on a diversity of levels. They generally want to do like what's the minimum viable for us to reach whatever our corporate goals are. And that's usually fairly limited. So there's not a lot of opportunity to kind of push the envelope and really expand horizontally on the platform. There are some instances that's true, but for the majority, it's not. Salesforce has looked at as kind of a cost center, and we want to, you know, do what's minimally needed. Whereas in consulting, now you're dealing with these companies have already chosen to innovate in a way that's unique to them, and they have gone outside of their internal skill to do so. So they're looking for you to tell them what they don't know, to share with them what they don't realize they need, and to deliver something that they've not been able to do internally to be essentially to have kind of platform mastery, to really have that level of, kind of distinguished expertise. So that really pushes the envelope, raises the standard of excellence for what needs to happen, which accelerates your learning. And for those who are curious, right, really satiates their appetite around what needs to happen. I have not found a lot of examples in the marketplace, which is why people consistently get funneled to me. And we have, you know, a waiting list for people who want to be part of the academy because I keep it intentionally small. But there are avenues, I think, that are growing in this direction. So there are programs like the Hiring Our Heroes model, which can get people experience at consulting companies. That's for, you know, kind of veteran families. I think maybe Mike Wheeler is starting to grow in this area, although he refers people to me. I haven't found a lot of arenas where this is doable because people have to take on risk, and I'm comfortable taking on the risk because I keep it small, and I have a perspective of culture over competence when it comes to people on my team. This is a different perspective that I find in the marketplace, and why someone like Zachary, who had no technical experience, no technical vision or perspective, but had great culture, great character, and I could see his curiosity would give him the capabilities of doing this. It's just a unique scenario that I don't know of a lot of analogs in the marketplace.
And so, Zachary, just to summarize where we are, because I don't think we've actually said this in this recording yet, but how long have you been now working on Salesforce?
Yeah, so it would have been February 5 years ago that I called.
Okay, that's when you started as brand new, totally new to the setup menu, new to Trailhead. And now you're somebody, I mean, I guess you're working full-time with John and on projects, and are you doing mostly configuration work? Do you do data loads? Do you do training? What are all the things?
Gosh, I do everything on John's team. That's another reason I can grow so quickly with John is that I handle a lot of those responsibilities and sort of senior consultant and product owner. I'm on a lot of the client calls, a lot of the project management, the delegation of some of the work. But I also, my favorite part of the job is to actually do the configuration and like the flow automation, all of that. So I end up delegating a lot of it to myself.
Yes.
I do a lot of the configuration work. I've done a ton of data loads, very familiar with flow. I've been fortunate enough to work a lot with Conga and Field Service and Omnichannel and even some with like Fundingo and other apps like that. So
we sort of that's the other thing. If you're in-house, you're only going to know the apps that your own company has. Yeah. When you go through consulting and you have these people around you, you see all these different ways people use these plugins for Salesforce. Conga, I've heard about for years and years and years, is one of the better document generation tools, but I'm sure it does even more than that. I don't even know the scope of what it does now. And then you mentioned Flow. Flow people get into maybe if they're an admin, but I agree with John where a lot of people are like, well, I know how Process Builder works. I'm good. And Flow is faster on the system. Flow is more scalable. Flow is a better UI. And you have so many opportunities to go learn Flow and do that. So you're becoming somebody that's super desirable through this process because you've had all those experiences. And if anything, one thing you see in consulting faster is, what do I not want to do? Like, you can either learn it from John or you can have it happen on a project. And, you know, I'm not John's super capable. Consultants always maintain and minimize risk or deal with it, you know, resolve it quickly when it happens. But like, you see so much more of how to configure Salesforce across all those projects in the amount of time. And it's super cool.
Yeah. And I'll say one more thing about, like, I was that person who I had gotten familiar with Process Builder. I just wanted to stay there.
Yeah.
I'm not the kind of person that likes to venture out, you know, unduly. And then they made the push for Flow. And then part of being on a team, a variegated team, was that other teammates were getting into Flow. And the goal and direction of the team was to go into Flow. And so I had help and support, people who like jumped in before me and then taught me the basics. And then now I love Flow. I'll work on Flows all day long.
Wait.
That was part of being on the team that sort of got me past that, my own hang up there.
Yeah. And one thing you get with a team also, we talk at Salesforce about how, you know, people will say, well, how much staff do I need to support Salesforce? And our guideline forever has been, I don't know, about one admin for every 200 users. And that doesn't include developers. Maybe if you want to add a part-time developer, a developer for every 200 users, you might use that too. To get to the size, if you were in-house, which, you know, in-house is great too, but I think we're agreeing that learning is fast in consulting. To get to be on a team of six people, you'd have to work for a company that has at least 1,200 licenses of Salesforce. And that happens. There are hundreds to thousands of companies that have, you know, tens of thousands that have more than 1,000 licenses. But they're probably not hiring somebody who doesn't have the background. So you found something really special with John. And John, super cool opportunity to provide Zachary. There's a lot of complimenting going on here. I don't want to make anybody uncomfortable. But like, it's a really cool thing that happened. And I've thought for years, you know, wouldn't it? Salesforce is so great from a trailhead or a learning perspective or an administration perspective, because you can work from anywhere. What you need is your fingertips and typing skills. You need to be personable if you're a consultant to get requirements out of people and a good listener, but then you can configure and you can do the job from anywhere. And that's just, you're a great example of somebody who's telling us real life here about like 5 years ago, this has happened.
Brilliant. And just another highlight for those listening of like, could this be for me? I think Zachary brought up a really good point of like, there's people like me, like I feel like I have to learn something new every day. I love this. My cat is participating, is very excited, but I have to learn something new every day to feel like, you know, my life is meaningful. Most people are not like that. They're like, I already know how to do things. I'm good. You know, like, I don't want to add that extra stress and anxiety to my world. I think Zachary brings up a good point. He's like, I'm kind of like that. Like, I'm kind of cool with the status quo. Like, I got this down. I've, you know, practiced it. I don't need to change it. But yet you can still have a very strong and successful career in Salesforce, even being that way,
Yes.
Just being open to the fact that, okay, look, there's going to be some innovation from time to time. There's going to be some release notes I need to review. There's going to be a new way of doing things from time to time that I need to check into, and I'm open to that. And I think that's a really important thing. That's probably a learned skill that Zachary's kind of had to get into, because I remember giving the direction like, hey guys, we're not using Process Builder anymore for client projects. We are moving to Flow. So if you don't know Flow yet, you're going to need to, because we're not delivering antiquated solutions anymore.
Right.
Right. And he really took it up and became a resource for others, you know? So just transitioning here, Zachary, I'd love to think back as you look, like, what are some key inflection points during, you know, you talked about initially that decision to call me back, but now even during your career, because, you know, at this point, the DevPod, you know, you went through the academy, you became part of the commercial team, and now DevPod has been a springboard for you as you take on your first kind of full-time position at one of our partners, which is really exciting. I'm just curious if you can think back to some key inflection points during your career, right? Where, you know, these are things that people can learn from and kind of think through in their own world. Like, these are the areas that they need to be ready to maybe think differently or to take advantage of those opportunities that don't knock every day.
It's an excellent question. I would say one thing is really learning yourself and what you, like we've been talking about, like, I'm very anxious. I don't necessarily like to learn the new things. And that has been, there's been maybe not necessarily specific instances I could think of, but along the way, having to constantly understand that I could handle those situations. Like, one would be understanding in dealing with anxiety, for instance, understanding that, like, one, I have a team of people to support me. Like, I have John, I have teammates, and I don't necessarily need to know the answer right now. So even if I am afraid in the moment on a call or like with a boss or a client and they're coming at me, I don't necessarily need to know the answer right now. I just need to know how to find the answer or get somebody who does. And so that was one thing that I really had to learn and still struggle with in the moment and handling that anxiety. And then I'd say being open to the new technologies, ways of doing things, the release notes, staying up to date, that sort of thing would be a big one as well. I don't necessarily do so well with that one. And then, like, in the consulting world also, and this goes back to, like, just like knowing yourself, I'm not super organized, especially if you throw a lot of competing priorities at me, having to have different emails for our different partners and different schedules for our different partners and a bunch of different projects going on. And that was very daunting for me and for a long time, and got to the point where sometimes I'd be really frustrated with it because I'm not good at it. I'm not geared towards it. But I would say being okay with taking on responsibilities that I'm not comfortable with, knowing that, of course, I'm not comfortable with it right now because I'm not good at it. I'm not used to it. And being willing to step into those responsibilities and those, you know, weaknesses of mine with a gratitude that I get to work on that. And I would say that goes across the board for, like, dealing with my anxiety on calls or, you know, how to handle or word situations that I don't necessarily know how to talk about because I don't actually know that part of Salesforce yet. I know I'm going to have to go talk to John about it later, and, you know, managing my schedule. And then along the way, I don't know if this is under the same umbrella, but I would say it for me has been, like, personally, as someone who didn't come from tech and didn't expect to be in tech, was realizing the value of, one, that what Salesforce can offer as an opportunity for me. And then also just the idea of, like, anything done well is worth doing, and really starting to, that was an inflection point where I had considered, we didn't really talk about this, but I had considered maybe going back to school for, you know, psychology and some other interests of mine. I was really struggling. It was bartending. Then it was maybe I'll go back to school. There's a lot of things along the way that I was struggling with personally. And I think kept me from giving my best to what I was doing at the time. And just, I would say, realizing that whatever I end up doing, wherever this path takes me, just do it well, you know, even if it's in anxiety producing sometimes.
Yeah, I say that all the time. Whatever you're going to do, just go be excellent at something.
Yeah.
Ideally, hopefully, it ends up being something that pays you as well, because that makes everything better. But I think it's a great philosophy. So cool you found it. You also remind me of me in my 20s when I was like, I don't know what I want to do. I didn't know about Salesforce. I was doing something else. I was doing IT consulting. I couldn't have called my future. And I was not comfortable talking about things I didn't know about. So lots of discomfort. Mm-hmm. And eventually, what's cool about specializing and in a product line like Salesforce or whatever, pick whatever you want, is you will become an expert. And once mm-hmm. you are mostly an expert, now you have way more confidence. And one other thought I have is also, I find that anything I want to learn about in Salesforce, 4 hours away from me being a relative expert.
Yeah, to a large
knowledge wise.
For sure. I spend a lot of my day Googling new stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're learning all the time.
Oh, yeah. Constantly.
Yeah.
As part of, again, being on a team that's handling so many diverse, is that we have to solve a lot of new problems. So sometimes I don't know the answer yet.
Yeah, all the time. It happens all the time. That's how John and I hang out. We tell each other what we don't know.
Exactly.
I don't know what's going on right now. Do you know what's going on?
I think it is. To me, it's part of what makes it. It's part of what makes my professional life really invigorating. And I think you, it may have become contagious for you, which is that sense of yes, I have a task to learn. I need something done, so I need to go learn about it. But in the process, I might learn all this ancillary and residual stuff on my way that I just tuck down in my tool belt because somebody's going to need that someday. And it's worth my time. I'm already here. I can give it a few extra minutes. And then now, 6 months, 8 months down the road, somebody needed that. And now I pull it out of my belt and I'm like, all right, I didn't specifically go to get this, but it was on my way to getting something else. And now I can help you with it. And that makes the investment worth it.
That's what I think the power of like anything done well is worth doing, like lies. That because if you focus on one thing, you're going to get a lot out of it. You like get everything around it. If you try to do everything, you don't really get any of it. So
yeah, no, it's good. And I'd use the phrase, right, that, you know, in life, you hear a lot about, you know, you got to be a go-getter. And that to me is maybe true, but it's a very self-centered position. I would prefer to say in life, to be successful, you need to be a go-giver, because then you're affecting a lot more people, and all those people have lots of discretion, and you're building up a lot of reciprocal goodwill. And the combination of all those people contributing back to you is far greater than whatever impetus and initiative you would be taking on your own.
And also, I see that a lot on John's team at Dipon. He gives a lot to us, and then we sort of reciprocate amongst ourselves. And then I've been on here long enough that I get to see a lot of people grow, and then you get the benefit of like I learn from people who joined after me all the time, and I can now, you know, I can delegate responsibilities to people because I know that they can do something because I know I showed them how to do it. And then you develop that relationship as well and that rapport with each other where you want to help out. I think that's much more valuable long-term than necessarily some technical expertise.
Very good. So just a few more questions as we close out here. So one, what would you say to yourself 5 years ago? So if you could speak back into your life, who you were 5 years ago, what would you tell yourself just related to this direction, this platform, or just kind of the direction in life?
Yeah. One thing I would say is probably what I've already said in terms of anything done well is worth doing and will put you in a better position down the road if you'll just do it. And so I would say, go ahead and dive into the Salesforce thing. You can tell it's a good opportunity and take any good opportunity that comes your way and dive into it, because that'll be the way that you get the most out of life, even if it's not the path that you maybe anticipated. But I guess if I'm talking to myself 5 years ago, I would say, you don't have a path, so why not do this? And then I say, along with that, just a gentle reminder that, you know, I am an anxious person, and that doesn't really go away. You just get better at handling it. So I would encourage myself to continue to take on responsibility with gratitude rather than resentment, and to practice the skills that are going to prepare me best to handle those situations, because that's, you know, as comfortable as I'm going to be in the situation is to be prepared for it. And then on top of that, to just know that like anxiety will always be your friend. It'll always be there for you. So learn to love him.
Well, and on that point, just because, you know, having done this now, you know, this is my 21st year in the ecosystem, I've seen a lot of people come and go. And the anxious person is actually the, I would say the more common scenario. Someone like me who doesn't really get stressed out is pretty rare. And so I think there are tremendous advantages to that anxiety, and it should be, it's worth calling out here because it is a trait that can have some significant benefit in this business. I mean, can you highlight any examples?
I'd say it makes us sensitive to people's responses and clients' needs, and to even our teammates as well, because we don't want to rock the boat. So we want to like understand people and understand where they're coming from and see if we can't find a mutually beneficial outcome. And I think gaining the skill, finding that and handling that, and I think consulting is like a crash course in doing that, is beneficial both for the person with anxiety, but also the person with anxiety can bring a lot to that. Yeah, I would say just a sensitivity, social situations, I think is oftentimes where it comes from.
Do you use any tools, like when you're, does anxiety take you off track? And do you use any tools, frameworks, acronyms in your work, let's say in discovery or client conversations, that help reduce the anxiety or keep you on track?
And that, yes, to some degree. And I think it comes with experience. I mean, I would say I can definitely look back at myself and see that I am less, I would say I'm less anxious than I was, but fewer situations make me as anxious as I was. And I think it's because of a few things. One is the experience of knowing how to handle the situation. So when maybe somebody suggests something or asks something, and especially if they're not in a great mood about it, instead of panicking and not knowing what to say, even if I think it was maybe a bad suggestion or like my answer isn't going to be what they want, being able to start to ask the right questions and say like, what are you really looking for in that? Like, what's the end goal that you have in mind? Like, what are you envisioning? And helping them imagine maybe what Salesforce can really give them. And then sort of allows you to reframe whatever solution you're going to provide in a way that is in line with that vision that you help them imagine, while also listening to their needs. I think that's something that, as an anxious person, I really do want to know. I want to understand where they're coming from, understand their needs. But then that also allows me to curate my answer and my solution in a way that's going to come across better to them. And then It's, I would say, taking care of myself physically is huge, which is, it's like really simple stuff. Like if I take care of myself and if I can sleep right and eat right, and then even in the moment physically, watching my breathing and watching my like tone and pace of voice. Cause a lot of times if you'll just say something calmly, then it's fine, right? Even if they're getting upset, if you can just handle the situation, if you feel, if they sense the peace from you, like then it puts them at ease, you know? And then being as prepared as possible for what you're going to get into, especially if you know it's a cantankerous client or something, or a difficult conversation, or maybe something you haven't done before, just preparing as much as possible so that you have less to be anxious about, because you know how it's
you think
go.
Cantankerous clients are actually anxious themselves?
Oh, I'm sure. John likes to remind us anxious people that a lot of times if they're coming down on you, it's because they got something else going on. Like something, somebody's, maybe their boss is coming down on them, so they're coming down on you. It's not about you. You know?
Oh, dude, I say that all the time.
Yeah.
It's not about you. It's happening near you. It's happening in your presence, but it's not necessarily because you are the reagent that made this happen. Yeah. It's just happening. And so just keep powering through it. I love that you, John, that's why I like you.
Oh, he's taught us a lot about that.
Well, it's because I've made a lot of mistakes, you know, and I always want to be the Michael Jordan of Salesforce, that Michael Jordan missed more shots than any other player in NBA history.
Yeah.
And that's because he made more shot attempts. Right. And, I'm happy about that. And I think, you know, what you highlighted there was a tremendous amount of value for being an anxious person. And I think sometimes that can come across as pejorative, but it's clearly a tremendous advantage. For those listening, right, if you're an anxious person, it might predispose you to be an excellent Salesforce admin, consultant, and future architect. And I think one thing to highlight that I'd love to hear from you as we think about, you know, this year we were focusing on, you know, taking the leap from admin to architect. And that's an area where you and I had many conversations around, okay, you know, maybe I have a little bit of my feet squarely in the admin art space and I can kind of do these things when the recipe is given to me. I'm curious what your, you know, what do you feel that What made you transition to that idea of saying, maybe I don't need the recipe given to me. Maybe I can go and discover and figure that out for myself. You know, was there a mindset or a setting? What was that that helped you with that transition?
Yeah, I would say to some degree, I have a natural bent that way in terms of puzzle solving and logic. I like to tinker. I like to fix things. I like to solve problems. I think it got to the point where I was comfortable enough at sort of the system administrator level that I had a good grasp of Salesforce and maybe the architecture and a little bit of the automation. And I had handled enough projects that I started to see how different business models fit into that. And as we talked, I did really like the not necessarily always coming looking for an answer, but a client would give me a problem and I would have, you know, an idea in my head that I wanted to try out and starting to tinker with that. And then sort of with your encouragement, started to look into the technical architect track as my sort of next goal in Salesforce certification. And I hit that really hard this year, especially in the summer. Took Platform Developer 1, Sharing and Visibility, Data Architect, and Data Integration, or integrations, all in, I don't know, a 3 or 4 month period, something like that, 3 month period. I learned a ton about Salesforce. It sort of peeled back another layer I hadn't seen before and didn't even know was there. And that sort of really whet my appetite for what was possible and made me realize that now I have an even better grasp of, you know, like sharing and visibility and data architecture. It tells you a lot about, you know, best practices and how to architect things. And then integrations just sort of peel back one little layer on a whole world of something that I'm still not super familiar with, but is super fascinating to me. And I would love to be able to architect that sort of thing. I would say a combination of getting to a place where I was comfortable enough that I could start coming up with my own ideas while I was tinkering. Because again, I'm not necessarily the person who immediately jumps into something they don't know until maybe I've been prodded a little bit. But I got to a point where I was comfortable where I was at and I needed some more challenge and was interested in that sort of architect, sort of coming up with the solutions. There's a lot about consulting that I've been grateful for, but I think the things I like the most are the solutioning and the actual getting to do the work. Mm-hmm. So that sounded like a good track for me.
Yeah.
And then that's, you know, opened up opportunities to further my career in Salesforce, which I'm excited about as well. So that's kind of my where I was at when I made that decision to dive into architect.
Yeah, I love it. And, you know, it is amazing how it's like driving a car. You know, Salesforce, there's many people who get in the driver's seat, get in the passenger seat, you know, they kind of touch the pedals, they the steering wheel, but they have no idea on the drivetrain, the transmission, the engine components. And, you know, when you get to an architect level and you're like, okay, how do I build this car given the components? How do I build a race car? How do I build a cargo van? What needs to change in the drivetrain and the pedal locations and the engine? And how can I leverage those components? That's an exciting part, because you get to dive into more of the inner workings of Salesforce and understanding some of those limits and aspects. And I think given, you know, where you're going in your future, I think you've described, you know, where do you see yourself, you know, 3 to 5 years from now, right? Now we've gone the journey from not having at all a technical career aspiration or vision. Now you've been in one for 5 years. And so where do you see yourself 3 to 5 years from now?
Funny that you lay it out like that, because honestly, what I'm looking at is where I'm going has an opportunity for me to make a transition even more to the development side. So I'm hoping in, you know, 3 to 5 years, I can get way more into development and, you know, UI, Lightning Web components, but also integrations. So sort of like the full technical side of it, which, yeah, 5 years ago, never would have considered a career in tech. But that's sort of where I'm hoping to go, is more into the dev side of things.
Well, it's exciting. Thank you for sharing more of your journey with us. It's been such a pleasure, not only on this call, but to participate with you and have been some small part in helping you onboard to this. I hope many of those who are listening will take that opportunity and just reach out far and wide to find those avenues where they can get on board. Trailhead.com is a great start, but you really need those relationships. You need that team. You need that collaboration behind you to help you have the confidence and the backstop to be successful, even in the midst of some of those challenges. So thanks so much for sharing your story with us today, and look forward to people hearing your story and following your great example.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on. And thank you so much for your part in that journey. It's been a real help.
Thanks for your sharing and your perseverance. It's a great story to take us through from not knowing Salesforce to now 5 years later, you know, advising people on Salesforce and even becoming maybe a developer, which is sort of, you know, going beyond admin. Finding connections. One thought I had, John, was there's user groups all across the country. And so that would be another way to go find those user groups, go learn Trailhead, go get interested, but then you could start also meeting people in the user groups. So thanks again, Zachary.
Best of success in your new venture.
Appreciate it.